I started taking guys out in field again. And one day I just stumbled upon something that was naturally going on that was working. And I put two and two together and I realized that unconsciously I was really using the skills I'd learned from going to improv classes on Monday nights. If you know anything about improv, there's one rule of improv, the first rule of improv that has to be the case, or else the whole design falls apart like a house of cards. And that is yes and.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Attention, attention, attention. You're tuning into the Going North Podcast. And today's special sponsor is the Going North Podcast Advancement Shop, baby. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Because we got some brand new hats now to add to the collection. So that's right, folks. We got some Going North Podcast hats, some Advance Others to Advance Yourself hats, and a few other designs. So head over to the goingnorthpodcast.com shop. Pick up a hat or two. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, my friends. It's right indeed, because today's wonderful guest, you're going to be in for a treat that's good enough to eat, because today's wonderful, wonderful guest, I say wonderful already, yeah, I said it, I'm going to say it again, because this man's had me on his show twice already. His top-rated show that's been around for a good long while. My man's an OG in this piece, indeed, because today's wonderful international best-selling book cast, y'all, because not only is a wonderful author and a fellow podcast host, he's done both, y'all. He's a husband, a father, entrepreneur, world-class dating coach, adventure traveler, and the co-founder of the wonderful company X and Y Communications. Let's give it up for Mr. S and M himself, the sensational and marvelous Scott McKay.
All right. Man, Dominic, for a while there, I thought you were talking about my wife, you know, with this treat good enough to eat stuff and everything. But then you got around talking about me, and I think it all turned out for the best, man. That was one heck of an introduction. I feel just not honored, but like blessed, man. Wow. Amazing. All right, man. Happy to be here. Let's do this thing.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And do is right. Maybe doing this for a long time, man. Like, my goodness. So what got you into the wonderful dating coach game, man, because you're like one of the OGs in it?
Yeah, kind of. I'm kind of like Yoda now when we go to mastermind groups, right? Well, let me tell you, I've always just adored women. I really have, and I still do. And I wanted to date them and all the rest of that good stuff. I wanted to be close to them. I actually was very good at making friends with girls when I was younger. And dudes, you know, but I was one of those guys who could actually make friends with girls and really enjoyed it. I just really enjoyed female company. But I don't think I ever really was the guy who was a natural at hitting the jackpot at getting them all to just fawn all over me and be attracted and, you know, all that stuff. Not as much as I would have liked. And so it's one of those situations now, of course, where I wish I would have known now what I, you know now then what I know now. But I didn't. So there was a lot of suffering culminating in a divorce after 7 years married to the wrong woman who was schizophrenic. And on top of all that, I'm a very optimistic, generous person who kind of sort of tends to attract someone who's kind of narcissistic and manipulative. So she was that on top of being crazy. But I really just sort of excused a lot of her just really bad behavior for two reasons. First of all, she was nuts. Second of all, because she was a woman and I'm a guy, and so the media says everything's always my fault because I'm the guy. So when she divorced me because of some crazy thing she saw, thought she saw, but really didn't, everybody told me that I couldn't have been a better husband, couldn't have been a better father. And all that did was make me feel like a victim, Dom. And I didn't like feeling like a victim. I wanted to have some agency in this. So what I did was I did the unthinkable. I figured out how women think, which of course is impossible. according to general conventional wisdom, but it isn't, you know. And I also figured out what really is, not just what Cosmopolitan magazine reads. And it started working really, really well. And I started dating really, really well. And it culminated with a lot of my friends were saying, how are you bringing all these different girls around? How are you doing that? A couple of them told me I should write a book. And so I became really passionate about helping other guys and other women, frankly, because remember, I've always really liked women, helping people just get together and find love. Because I, you know, even more profoundly so since I first started, I've realized there's so much pressure against that. You know, men, women meeting, and you know, one of my soapboxes that people accuse of being a conspiracy theory is that there's pressure on the birth rate. But the birth rates have been dropping, and that's been societally influenced. And there's over a dozen reasons why. So I think it's hiding in plain sight. I don't think it's really even a conspiracy theory that there's pressure on the birth rate. And I'm just really kind of a voice crying out in the wilderness nowadays, it seems. In a world of men going their own way and angry women at men and, you know, with the Me Too movement, and et cetera, just that men and women were designed to get along and be attracted to each other, literally, even physically. And so we shouldn't have this adversarial relationship against each other. So hopefully that answers your question. I try to do it a little differently than I've done in other shows.
Hey, man, definitely appreciate it, man. It is a great answer, too. And it's freaking awesome that you're able to really go through that, I guess, Lego jungle, if you will, barefoot of the first marriage to get through the current.
That was an ordeal. The Legos in the living room I can relate to. Yeah. We also have dogs, and they chew up stuff and leave them all pointy and sharp right in the middle. And, you know, you're bad. Yeah, same thing. Yeah, I feel you. And the Legos and the dog toys.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Dog toys too, definitely, definitely, indeed. They sometimes toy with you.
Yes. We have whippets, man. Too. Those little greyhound-looking dogs who are just—they're no matter how good you are, they're better than you. It's like dating an aerobics instructor, right? And they wear you out all day, and then you step on their stuff at night. So I mean, crazy. But enough about me. Go ahead.
Hey, it's all good, man. It's all good, Dave. But hey, man, that's freaking awesome indeed. And just that power of just really being able to get back out in the field and actually basically find a woman of your dreams for real and actually be friends with her and being wonderful life partners with her, man. So what helped you through that in-between process of, I guess, in a way, recovering from wife number one and then finding the true wife?
Well, I think that I was motivated because I didn't want to be a victim. And I'll tell you, it wasn't like I had to go through this entire journey to find a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. I started seeing inklings of success as I went. And I was like, hey, you know, this really is kind of working. I started fearing women less, asking more women out. I started mastering online dating, which back in that era, 2003, 2004, 2005 was pretty much the heyday of it. And I started raising the bar, for lack of a better word, with women who were more attractive to me, and I got along better, and certainly no more crazy ones. And it was actually kind of nice. And once I got to that level where I was enjoying the company of women I really liked, I did indeed enjoy that for about a year and a half, but I was always looking for, you know, to leave a legacy and to have another long-term relationship, have a couple more kids. And so when I met Emily, I kind of recognized her after all of that journey.
Sweet, that's what I'm talking about indeed. I'm talking about indeed. So now I basically got that black belt level in, I guess, male-female relationships at this point.
It is a martial art. If you misspell martial marital, probably even better. And my wife is dyslexic, so I wouldn't put that past her.
I see what you did there. So, with all of that, now you got this wonderful business that you're able to found with your wife, and you're able to get these books out. And my goodness, 4 Amazon bestsellers, no less. So I guess after taking all that advice, what helped you to actually hunker down and get those books written and published?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people will say, okay, Amazon number one bestseller, big deal. I agree. But to do them in like dating and relationships or whatever, you always have a lot of a lot of competition on Amazon. And I got the screenshots to prove it of my book sitting number one. But really, I built such a wonderful, responsive, tuned in, targeted, whatever you want to talk about it, customer base and a group of people. And I just love the people I work with, and it had gotten to be tens of thousands. So when I put a book out, it wasn't quite like I have an evening show for 4 million and can write some books about politics or something, and they'd be, New York Times bestsellers the next day. But I definitely, had a fan base who was very responsive, and they pushed the book to the top every time. And I and told friends, and the books did really well.
I'm talking about these indeed. That's what I'm talking about indeed. And that's cool. You're able to build that wonderful following and get into that space and still in the space no less. And if I'm not mistaken, nowadays you were able to find a way to crack the code for those looking to get back out there and socialize when folks are probably forced to be turtles.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to be a dating coach during the COVID lockdowns because nobody was really in the market for what we were doing, but we survived through it and everybody kind of changed afterwards. People's social muscles were atrophied. And you know what I did, Dom? I started taking guys out in field again. And one day I just stumbled upon something that was naturally going on that was working. And I put two and two together and I realized that unconsciously I was really using the skills I'd learned from going to improv classes on Monday nights. Because I like to be funny, as you've already figured out. And when I was working on my comedy skills, because I wanted to be quicker on my feet, of course, the greatest way in the world to do that is to go do improv. And I live in a city where that's available to me. And so probably a good 2 years I went to improv classes on Monday nights and got really good at it. If you know anything about improv really is just starting a conversation in the context of something intentionally silly, and it can't not be funny. It always turns into something humorous simply because of what's going to eventually happen. But there's one rule of improv, the first rule of improv that has to be the case, or else the whole design falls apart like a house of cards, and that is yes and. So anytime someone starts a conversation, like, "Oh, I see you're going to Gay Paris," and you go, "Yes, and not only yes, and when I go to Gay Paris, I am going to have myself a croissant." You don't ever do something like, "No, actually, I'm going to Rome, you idiot," because that's not yes, and that's derailing the conversation. Now you laugh, but I know I've heard from women that they've gone out on dates and they'll start talking, and the guy will disagree and challenge them every time. Like, I know one woman who was a flight attendant for Southwest Airlines, and she had to endure sitting across the table from a guy who swore that Southwest Airlines flies Airbus A320s, not 737s. And
Wow.
indeed, Southwest Airlines flies only 737s. And finally, she just threw her fork in the plate and said, "You got the bill, buddy. I'm not continuing." Because he just was no, but every time instead of yes, and moreover, he was usually wrong, right? I mean, how obnoxious is that to try to tell someone that you're more of an expert in what they do for a living than they are, and you're wrong. Well, anyway, having done that, I got into the habit of yes-anding people. And if you listen to my show, it actually is wonderful. It makes for wonderful conversation and podcast too. I'll say yes and when people, do a discussion. It's a discussion-oriented show, The Mountaintop, that I do. And so I do yes and all the time to keep the conversation going. And I was out in the field with women, and I realized that people are actually very hungry right here, right now, like within the past 6 months to a year. People are very, very hungry to be social again. And I would walk into a store and I would go, "Wow, all of these shirts in here are incredibly bright colors, and this is a men's store." And the woman will go, "Oh, well, yeah, that's actually what our entire brand's built on. We think men wear, too much black, white, and gray scale stuff, and we want to brighten up their lives." And I said to her, "Yeah, you're exactly right. Here I am wearing like a navy blue shirt and gray, pants, and I probably one of your customers." She goes, "Yes, so you should probably buy some what I have." I said, "Well, yes, what's on sale?" Next thing you know, we've yes-anded our way into a friendly conversation where we feel like we already like each other, we already are getting along, we're having fun, and basically all I'm doing is improv. Because the other thing about funny is it's also fun, and when women in particular have fun, they feel safe with you. And so what I did was I compiled a whole bunch of examples, and I published a little audio program, only cost $15, called Yes And, that helps enable guys to really be catalysts for this conversation out there, not only with women but with other dudes. And you know, when you're one of the few in the crowd who actually lead these conversations at this particular point in history, my goodness, you just become, it's so much easier than ever before to at least be social. You know, even people who feel like, well, I'm a little introverted, I'm a little shy, I don't even really like big drawing a big crowd and holding court with people, or I mean, I have a little social fear. This is so easy that even you can just talk to someone who's bagging your groceries. And they, you know, they say something like, "Did you find everything okay?" And then you might say something like, "Yes." And I even found something for the first time I've never seen at this grocery store that I'm really excited about. And they'll go, "Yes, and what's that?" And the next thing you know, you're just enjoying yourself more socially already. And so are the people you're talking to. It's great. It works. It's proven from improv.
Woo! That's right indeed. Probably should have added Jewelry Store Manager to your intro, man. My man's dropping gems, baby. That's right indeed. That's right.
Yes, and there's a diamond in the rough somewhere in there.
Improv skills putting to work, baby. You'll love to see it. You'll love to see it indeed, because you're so right indeed. And I love the way that you basically phrased it from the beginning of the point, like, hey, our social muscles have atrophy, because yeah, like a lot of folks, they're starving out there, and if you can be that gregarious person, have that wonderful riz, as
Right,
some would say,
right.
like, hey, you'll set yourself apart, and folks will be happy to really talk with somebody, especially a fun person. It's like, oh shoot, wow, this is actually somebody who's actually alive, and they actually have life to them, and they're fun. It's not the
Yeah.
humdrum, boring nonsense.
Yeah, I think a lot of men in particular have a hard time being fun. I think we've been told that we shouldn't have any fun. We should be stoic and, you know, pose for every picture like this. You know, and I've never understood that. You know, I get so much further in life being easygoing and helping welcome people, because I don't think you have to sacrifice your confidence or your wit or your intelligence or, God forbid, your masculinity at the door simply because you're being fun and gregarious. I think that all can fit hand in glove.
That's what I'm talking about. Hand and glove, indeed. That's right, indeed. All the baseballs. That's right, indeed. Hand and glove. You'll love to see it. That's right, indeed. So, my goodness, man, it sounds like you've lived one heck of a marvelous multitude of lives in one life, man, because you have the improv class you went to and did all these wonderful adventures. And if I'm not mistaken, are you still part of a rec league for soccer?
Me?
Yeah.
No, last time I played soccer was high school.
Oh, okay.
I did have a stint there where at age 45, I went back and played lacrosse in the 18 over league. Every time I got hit, I was reminded I was alive, which was refreshing. That was fun. No, but it's funny. I mean, my kids, like me, are kind of involved in sports that aren't like the typical seasonal team sports. When I was a kid, I'm a child of the early 80s, and so I loved BMXing. And that was probably what I was best at as a kid, although I wasn't even very good at it. So my two youngest, especially my youngest, who's a daughter, took to BMX racing like ducks to water. And my wife and my son and my daughter have all blown away my accomplishments in that sport just laughably. But it's fun, you know. A lot of times we as parents, we want our kids to do what we want them to do. We want them to adopt what we're passionate about, and we're really very disappointed when they don't. And I think after our two older ones, you know, neither one of them were about to be interested in something like BMX racing. We relaxed and started enjoying them for who they were and what their personality types were developing to be. And so I think my son didn't take to BMX racing at first. He did one day when he was about 7. I'd already built a bike for him because, of course, I did. Because I love building bikes, you know. And he said, "Hey, can we take that thing out to the track and see what?" Yes! Yes, we can. Let's load up the truck. Let's go, man. And my daughter was three. And we went. And I mean, we're figuring, okay, well, Sarah's along for the ride. Hopes, we'll get her, an icy pop or whatever, and hopefully we can babysit her. And she's like, and me, and me. And they have what's called striders, which is how they teach kids how to ride bikes nowadays. And they're little bikes that you push kind of Flintstone around with your feet. And it's a wonderful way to learn how to ride bikes because training wheels are counterintuitive. You're actually going the wrong way when the training wheel's holding you up. But when kids can push around and figure out how the bike works, they're just off and running. And they have races. It's the cutest thing you've ever seen, bro. Like they have like 1 and 2 year olds out there, in their little striders. So my daughter was three. Next thing you know, she was just not going to be denied. She wanted the pedal bike. And so 3 years old, she started racing the pedal bikes. And by 5 years old, she was national number four expert girl in the whole country on clip pedals and everything before she even went to kindergarten. So my daughter has been the champion of that. She's still gung-ho for it at age 12. So I lucked out there. My son, two-time state champion, my wife, top 10 in the country, regional champion. My daughter and my wife went and represented the United States of America at the world's competition, which is like the coolest thing compared to the Olympics. And I've just been really, really blessed to have them involved with that. So my daughter, her personality is really gritty and she's cute. She's like her mom, she's her nickname is the Flying Chipmunk Racing because she's always had these little chipmunk cheeks. And all this hair that flies, And one day I realized that roller derby, which I remember like being the women's version of pro wrestling when I was a kid, had actually been legitimized as a sport, actually in Austin, Texas, sometime in the mid-aughts, and had become basically the coolest full contact sport for girls. It has a little culture tied to it. Everybody still has a nickname. Very cool. And I showed it to my daughter because I know she'd like to, she's very coordinated. So she likes to ride around the neighborhood on her skates and stuff and skateboards and bicycles. And so I said, hey, you got your roller skates. What about this? And her eyes lit up again, like when she was three. This is like a year and a half, 2 years ago. She went, me, I'm in, like, and me, and me. And so now she's become the MVP of junior roller derby. And she wears shirts that says, I wear skates and hit people. And it's just so that we got into the roller derby thing. And see, now I never saw that coming. I never in my wildest dreams would figure that I would be a roller derby person. By now, your whole audience has figured out that I'm a talker, as they say in New York. So I do all the play-by-play announcing for the BMX races, and now I do all the play-by-play announcing for the junior roller derby too. And it's a completely different vibe. And we're all just having big fun at it. Big fun at it. So, yeah, the sports thing in our family. And now, and we race the dogs because the dogs are little racer dogs, So Sarah trains the dogs. My son trains the dogs. My wife trains the dogs. They're just, they're little racing dogs. Sarah wanted a puppy and she wanted a puppy who would be like her. So they're both little racers. Fun. It's a lot of fun. But that's been our adventure lately, is all that stuff.
Hey, sounds like a whole lot of adventure to me. That's freaking awesome, my man. And it's really great that you're actually doing that. And heck, even probably brings up a point like, hey, some folks out there, especially like guys, is like, hey, like find some hobbies or something. Don't just be all about stoicism and finding your purpose and living it out all the time. Like, hey,
Yeah, and
you gotta
it can
take a
come and go.
breath.
You can get bored of something and do something else. I mean, for years and years, my wife traveled the globe, going all over the world and putting stamps in our passport. And there came a point around COVID where we realized, we weren't so broken up over not traveling 3 months a year anymore because we'd kind of been everywhere. And maybe now the kids were doing BMXing at the national level, we could pack up the RV and go on the road trip to do that. And it was fun in a completely different way. It's like a completely different chapter. But yeah, we are all in on experience in this family instead of just compiling stuff for the sake of it. Like all of our vehicles, all of our anything fancy we have is all tied to promoting the adventure, not just looking cool. That my daughter and my son somehow end up looking cool while they do it anyway. So go figure.
There you go. You'll be like, hey, it's a chip off the old block, just in a different area.
That's different your location. Daughter? That's your daughter. Oh, yeah, that's she adopted. She's adopted, right? Yeah. Now, your daughter is like so beautiful and cool and sharp and smart. Must be so she's adopted, right? Yeah, we get that a lot.
Ah, shame on them. But hey, it's all good. It's all good indeed. So my goodness, so with all these wonderful adventures, has there been a major lesson that sticks out from all of them that helps you to be the best scout that you can be?
Don't. Just stop being a snob. Okay? And under snob comes all of the things people get canceled for. You know, being a racist, being a sexist, being a classist, being whatever it is that, you know, separates you from other people and enjoying their company and enjoying this big adventure is all fear based. And I'm a big champion of getting over fear, because I think fear, you know, we fear that which we don't understand, that which we don't understand. And when we fear it, we begin to hate it. And when we begin to hate it, we just become ignorant out loud. So all the travel, all the competition, all, you know, BMX racing, getting to know the roller derby folks were just wonderful. You know, they're just out there and wonderful. And actually getting along with them, going to, you know, 110 countries in the world and treating people with respect and have them look at you like, you're an American and you're treating me with respect. Like, when's the shoe going to drop? You know, you come home just realizing that everybody deserves love and respect, and culture isn't weird. Culture is just different than what you're used to, and there's a lot you can really glean from it. Like, we have become almost too good at cooking Ethiopian food in that kitchen over there. Like, friends come over here, it's like, this is amazing. How can you do that? I just love it, and I went there, loved the food, and I wanted to master it. You know, my kids aren't the ones who won't eat anything. They'll basically eat everything. Everybody's their friend. You know, wherever they meet, they want to get to know them. And that's how I feel. And I just feel like there's so many wonderful things in culture all over the world to be curious about, that it's just a waste not to at least ask the questions and open your mind to it. It affects everything. It affects it, even the people I work with, the people listen to my podcast are so wonderfully all over the place, you know, literally and figuratively. You know, 18 to 89 is the oldest guy I've ever coached, from all over the world. And it's just wonderful. And, you know, it's great to see your kids embrace all that, mostly because they've never been taught any different. And then they can go and they can be, my daughter in particular, can be deeply competitive with these little girls, you know, just claws out there battling for championship, banging bars, hitting each other on the skates. And then they're all friends again afterwards and laughing and braiding each other's hair and everything. And it's, that's what life's supposed to be. I have this crusade against taking ourselves too seriously, because I think that's where we get all wadded up and offended and afraid to like meet women or to ask them out on dates, or just, you know, something bad's going to happen. And it's just this baleful cloud that hangs over people's head like Schlepp Rock. And I just think life's too short for that.
Indeed. Shorter than a 1 foot tall brick wall is definitely too short. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. That's right indeed.
You can so trip true. Over that. It's so short.
Oh yeah, sorry, my phone to the chew toys from earlier.
A lot of people are tripping through life, but that's a whole different podcast.
Oh yeah, you're definitely right indeed. So my goodness, so speaking of podcasts, since your fellow podcast hosts, always like to ask fellow hosts, what are their top three lessons learned from starting, running, and growing the magical show? So what are your top three lessons learned?
First of all, I've learned how to like my own voice. And I know that, you know, I'm trying not to come up with the same things everybody else will. Well, I remember back in the day when I would record like a voice, and I couldn't stand my own voice. So I changed it, adapted it, practiced it until I slowed down, stopped talking like an East Coast person, and enunciated better, and thought through what I was going to say more effectively, and lowered my voice, spoke more from the diaphragm, said it way up here like Joe Pesci, you know. And that was one thing. Second thing is I've lost all fear of speaking my mind and speaking in public. I am now one of these Looney Tunes who actually loves public speaking. And third, I've learned how to really respect the platform. You know, you've got to remember, even though you don't realize it, you're not standing in front of an audience. If that audience is there, and you're either going to continue to build them or you're going to lose them. And I've done a little bit of both after all these years. So I've really learned how to respect that audience and listen to them too, and give them the kind of show they want, and then not disappoint them, because I understand they're there for a reason. And I handle that with deep respect and a measure of, I guess, a measure of responsibility. I don't take myself too seriously, but I take the mission rather seriously.
My man dropping gems again, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right. Comes to that audience, you're either building
I'm
them
gonna
or
go
losing
broke if they keep dropping all the stems. I'm definitely gonna attract the wrong crowd if I'm dropping a bunch of gems.
Why, I say, this emerald is shiny.
Let's get
All in
let's
one
track this guy.
podcast.
Let's
Be
put an
like, I
air
heard
tag on
his.
this dude. He keeps dropping gems. I'll be able to throw a $100 bill down there.
But hey, some great points you brought up, so much, and heck, even the classic loving your own voice, because it's so true, especially from a editing perspective. If you don't outsource it, it's like, man, you got to learn to love your voice because you're going to be hearing it a lot.
Yes. And you almost, the more podcasting you do, you can't not work on your voice. You have to get better at it. It's just because after there becomes a Malcolm Gladwellian number of hours that you have to be, you know, you become 10,000 hours later, you have to be an expert, you know.
I love the way you said that, Malcolm Gladwellian,
Yeah,
instead
well,
of
he's the
saying
one that
regular
talks about it takes
10,000
10,000 hours to be an expert. Yeah.
hours. Yeah, and those hours don't come cheap because time moves
No.
too fast.
Right. Oh, I know.
So, my goodness, it's a rare occasion where you get to be on the guest side of the game. So, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're on it?
Actually, I've probably done 500 of these, so I don't know how rare it is. I'm probably more well done at this point, if not shoe leather. But you know what, Dom? I love when anybody asks me a question that's just not the typical. So where are you from? You know, I was born at a very young age, all those things. I like when people ask me a unique question that really requires me to thought some requires some thought, maybe even puts, you know, puts me on the spot a little. I actually relish that. I adore it.
All right. Well, going back in time a little bit. So, your fabulous book, What Works with Women, The Truth in Black and White. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
It would be something that is very tasty and good for you at the same time. Probably steak. I happen to believe steak's good for you, but what do I know?
There you
Better
go.
than
That's
you,
right.
better for you than like eating a bunch of carbs.
That's right. Heck, even Michael Jordan would eat steaks before certain games after a while. Yes, indeed, because all them darn calories would be burning, running back and forth all
Well, you
over
know,
that
you're
darn
at
court.
tuning your body before an athletic event is an underrated skill. You know, I mean, I remember back when my kid was five racing at the national level, I had to like carefully, I had to tune her like a two-stroke engine. We had to give her a banana at the right time before about 40 minutes before the main event, you know, and make sure she had a nap so she's fresh, and then make her sure she's hydrated. Oh yeah, that's huge, especially little kids. Can't give them any like fake food coloring or refined sugar till after they're done, or else they'll go nuts and spaz out on you and then crash right when you need them to be, you know, energetic. Oh yeah. There's much to that, actually.
That's a solid point brought up right there, indeed. It's a lot of parents probably to pay attention to that tip right there because it's so true, especially after a while when they're with their little kiddos.
And we're like, covering a lot of ground on this particular show, man. We really are. It's great.
It might be enough to cover Texas, maybe.
Oh yeah, I've driven that bad boy from one end to the other. It's an unbelievably long drive.
Or you can say that again, indeed. So my goodness, they're coming down.
The third of the country, if you drive from Los Angeles to, say, New York, the third of the country is Texas.
You know what? That is crazy work right there, but it's true.
Yeah. It's nuts. You look at it. You know, I think maybe it's more like if you drive from Atlanta to San Diego, it's a third of the country. Or from Jacksonville to, you know, drive. Yeah, it's a third of the country. I know there's a way to make it a third of the country from one coast to the other in America.
There you go. Maybe enough coasts to make Space Ghost proud of you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know it's probably, let me think about this. It's over 800 miles from Texas, Louisiana state line to where El Paso meets New Mexico.
Be like, are we there yet? Where's there? We're still in Texas. What? It's been like 12 hours.
I know.
Oh, man. But hey, we're coming down to the question that every guest gets to receive, and that is if you're to wake up tomorrow and you are 25 again, but you're still in the current year. What advice would you give to yourself?
Ask that girl out. No fear.
There you go. That's right, indeed.
That's the most concise thing I've said all night.
That's true. That's true, indeed. And it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. All the quarters and the pennies and the nickels, especially the nickelbacks. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Well, no, my man's got a smorgasbord of wonderful content. You mentioned that wonderful audio program from earlier, too, that might help folks just freaking turn the page all the way to page 300 from 150 with the social skills. So for those who need to cop that and keep up with all the stuff that you're doing, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Very easy. Just go to mountaintoppodcast.com. Listen to my show, and there are links to everything we've talked about and then some when you go to mountaintoppodcast.com. Also, and the show is free, of course, like this one is. You can get on my calendar, talk to me for free for 25 minutes. We do a little coaching. That's fine. If I just get to know you, that's great too. And you can sign up, get on my calendar anytime there at mountaintoppodcast.com as well.
Woohoo! There you have it, folks. MountaintopPodcast.com, baby. This podcast is called Going North for a reason. Y'all, we're helping you go north to this mountaintop right here. Scott McKay, baby. He's at the top of the mountain, y'all. Top 1% podcast in the freaking world, and he is a freaking shaman, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. He knows what the heck he's doing, and it's helped hundreds and hundreds of folks get to their next level, their own personal mountaintops, and he's still just getting started, y'all. So keep in contact with him. We're going to put links to all of his good stuff in the show notes so you can do just that, because he's still just getting started, y'all. So my goodness, any parting words before we close up shop, my man?
Deserve what you want. Go out and be the best version of you so that other people will be happy to help you succeed.
If you're listening to this, that means you're one cool individual. If you want to be cooler than two cucumbers, share this episode with someone that you think will enjoy it too. And be sure to subscribe and keep listening.